Julian, good morning.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks, mate. Been a while since we've had you on the show, so I appreciate getting you back. Now, looking at these recruitment networks and the situation we saw yesterday, just how prolific are these networks? Do we have any numbers on how many fighters they're actually sending over to places like Syria?
Well, we know how many fighters have been arrested trying to leave Australia, or potential fighters, people trying to join the conflict in Syria, Iraq. We also know roughly how many Australians, you know, might be over there at the moment. But no, we don't have great information, at least not open source information, on the threat, exactly how many potential foreign fighters there might be in Australia. Nor do we necessarily always know exactly how these recruitment networks work. And there's been a lot of speculation over the last year or two that the age of the recruiter is gone, and that that was really an earlier thing, more similar to what groups like Al-Qaeda did. Had Al-Qaeda recruiters out there working to find people and groom them and send them to certain places to become terrorists. Whereas Islamic State, it was assumed or said or thought that it was more about using social media and the lone wolf and people becoming self-radicalized. But that doesn't seem to be the case. One of the things we see more and more, not just in Australia, around the world, is that that old model, if you like, that old Al-Qaeda model of recruiters, is still very much alive and well and operating in Australia.
Without giving the game away, just how are Australian authorities actually fighting back? You'd advised people on this in the past. I mean, do we have ideas of how this most recent network was actually brought down?
Oh, look, there are many levels. And, you know, we have law enforcement and intelligence working on these issues, of course, domestic intelligence as well as policing. But then as well as that, there's the non-law enforcement levels of operations as well, where you have other departments like education, departments like prisons places like the Attorney General's Department and so on, you know, working on social issues or social programs to try and identify young people who might be at risk of becoming radicalized or becoming extremists, and offering them ways out, you know, before they're criminalized and brought into that law enforcement system, or even putting together broad social programs to try and prevent radicalization and extremism from growing, you know, amongst our communities, not just Islamic forms, but also forms from the far right and others.
Now, some jihadi fighters haven't found the battle in Syria. They haven't found it quite so glorious as they perhaps thought, and want to return home to Australia. At least that's according to some reports that a lot of news outlets are receiving. Now, as much, you know, schadenfreude as many Australians might feel over something like that, we do see some fighters taking their families over with them, innocents that have been swept up in the war in Syria. How is Australia actually handling that, or are they just keeping their hands completely off out of fear that radicalised individuals returning to Australian shores could radicalise others?
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting and difficult debate, Sean. It's been going on, you know, for a couple of years now. How do you best help, I suppose, but also how do you best address this extremism issue? And can you use, the services, I suppose, really, of those people who have tried to go over or have gone over and have been disillusioned by the reality? Because we know, of course, that the Islamic State has produced very slick and very well-produced advertising materials right through social media and through YouTube and so on, really glamorizing the conflict and glamorizing the role of a fighter who decides to go over and join. And that appeals to certain young people, you know, who want a bit of heroism in their lives, a bit of adventure, a bit of idealism, you know, horribly perverted, of course, but these things are understandable. It's not understandable to go over and join one of these criminal, horrible, violent terrorist organizations. But we do see that most of, or a good number of those who go over do want to return because they see that the reality is not nearly as glamorous as the way that it's portrayed, you know, by these very slick media operations that Islamic State operates. So can you bring them back, or can you allow them to come back, and then while still pressing charges on them or against them, can you then also have some sort of a program where, as part of their, let's say, as part of their, you know, reform or part of their paying back, they can perhaps be spokespeople about just how bad the situation is, as opposed to the propaganda around it. Because what we do find quite often, one of the problems is that, say, government or a government organization wants to message young people and say, you know, don't become an extremist or don't try and join Islamic State. It's a really bad idea. They often don't have a lot of credibility amongst the sorts of young communities where we're finding these sort of people are arriving out of. So, you know, maybe there's something in, you know, using these disillusioned people that have gone as not ambassadors but spokespeople, really, on why not to go, and something that's really going to be able to perhaps resonate in the ears of angry young, you know, predominantly males who are perhaps likely to be attracted to the cause.
And Julian, I did want to make sure that we touched on this one. Yesterday we heard news Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's pushed through changes to laws that would ensure, RAAF pilots are able to target non-combatant aspects of ISIS, cutting off supply lines and the like without fears of being charged with what could previously be considered a war crime under Australian law. Now, I mean, when you hear a phrase like war crimes, you might feel a little bit like you're standing at the very top of a very tall and very slippery kind of slope. But what do you make of these developments?
Well, it seems that this changed legislation in Australia is broadly in line with international norms at the moment. It seems to be about which national law sits in defining what is a war crime and what isn't a war crime. We've seen that Malcolm Turnbull's proposal, I think, has bipartisan agreement. Whether you think that the beginning of a slippery slope or not is another matter. My understanding of it is that this change would allow Australian Air Force to engage with and attack, basically, non-combatant or non-military or non-directly military targets. So what we're talking about here are things like supply lines, supply chain, you know, groups of people who might be marshalling for an operation, but prior to an operation actually beginning, you know, perhaps materials that are going to be used in a war effort. So I guess it depends on how you see strategically the war or the effort against ISIS unfolding. You know, if once ISIS stops its momentum on the battlefield, which it seems to have so far, it's not really taking over new ground anymore. So it's not like we're attempting to stop it invading new territory. It's sort of on the defensive and the retreat at the moment. So then I suppose the conflict from the air then moves into a new phase where you're trying to degrade it behind the lines and so on. What we don't want to see, of course, is the Australian Air Force get into a situation similar to the US Air Force, where they, you know, on occasion seem to bomb hospitals or civilian infrastructure, and you know, apparently it's a big mistake, and they apologize later, or they make noises that sound a bit like an apology later on, but then it happens again, and you know, nobody wants to see the Australian Air Force going down that particular road.
Well, obviously a very difficult battle being fought at the moment, so obviously one to keep our eyes on. Julian, do appreciate your time. Do appreciate you joining us on this morning's program.
Pleasure, Sean.